Welcome to the Certainty Advice Podcast, where advice starts with your best interests in mind, helping you achieve more in your financial life. And now, here's your host, founder of the Certainty Advice Group, Jim Stackpool.
G'day everybody, Jim Stackpool here, founder of Certainty Advice Group, with another in the Certainty Advice Podcast series. This series, I build it really to help people listening to this to have more financial certainty in their busy lives, whatever stage they are at, to cover all the trends and understand the pitfalls and the opportunities as the financial advice world continues to slowly and at times fast evolves. With the Royal Commission going on as I record this one, how do we make sense of all this so that we can live the lives we deserve to live, want to live, and not be misled and not waste any time? So today's topic is continuing this latest series we're doing on superannuation, realizing the great expectations that's been promised to us all over the last 20 or so years about super. Importantly, just today I read that our former Prime Minister, one of the fellows that got all this started with Kilty and Hawke, Paul Keating, said yesterday that super funds should not be run for profit. His observations of some of the machinations from the Royal Commission, the Hayne Royal Commission going on at the moment, is that there's been far too much inter-party transactions, as he called it, related party transactions. And it's shown that the original intent of super to serve members is not being adhered to by some of the players, particularly the banks and others. And meanwhile, on the other side, the rooster competition about who's got the best feathers continues between industry funds and retail funds, those that are offered by the banks and the private sector and those offered by industry. With the industry funds claiming a major progress today, as the recent released statistics from the Australian Prudential Regulatory Authority for the June quarter show that the industry funds now have more funds in them than the retail funds. Yes, I can hear you say, so what? What does that mean for us as members? So that part of that today is really core to our conversation today with Anne Marie Humphreys, Director Principal of Human Financial Planning in beautiful Albury on the banks of the mighty Murray River, where New South Wales intersects with Victoria. After 12 years as a senior economist with the Commonwealth Government, in 2004, Anne Marie started a great boutique advisory firm serving local and interstate clients, all for those that are enjoying retirement, for those running agri-enterprises, those running small businesses in towns, young entrepreneurs making that tree change into the vast opportunities offered by vibrant communities like Albury Wodonga. So today we're talking about, with Anne Marie, realising the great expectations from superannuation, particularly in light of our Royal Commission. And the key things to listen for, as you do listen, is how has the superannuation system process gone away from the original intent? Also listen for Anne-Marie's views on financial literacy, and is it simply a often walked out simple solution to tackling a very complex issue? And her views on the ridiculous nature of the best fund in the last 12 months against very suspect benchmarks. I think that will raise some, hopefully be of interest to you. But I started by asking, what's wrong with superannuation in Australia today?
I would actually argue that Australia's got a great superannuation system. I think it can certainly be improved in areas, but this is certainly a really good basis. And, you know, it is recognised around the world as being a leading example of how you can run superannuation. So I think we shouldn't lose track of that, notwithstanding that there's definitely some challenges with some aspects of its operation at the moment.
And what do you think those challenges are? What are the main ones for you, Anne-Marie, and the clients that you see?
I think it is the complexity. You know, if we think from when superannuation, compulsory superannuation, was introduced back in the early 90s to where we are now, the complexity surrounding the superannuation rules, and also in terms of the different types of, I guess, superannuation products, it's pretty hard for the, you know, average person on the street to really understand, you know, is their superannuation fund a good superannuation fund for them? Is it invested in a way that's suitable for them? Will it, you know, deliver the retirement lifestyle that they're looking for? I think, you know, in some areas, superannuation's gone away from, I guess, what was always the original intention, which is to, you know, provide a pool of assets to support people in retirement so that they're not reliant on the government welfare, and certainly the pressures that surrounded, or the reasons, you know, from a public policy perspective, why that was important.
How did that happen, Anne-Marie? How did it be taken away from the original intent? Was it the regulators? Was it the providers? Was it the market conditions? Was it consumer behaviour?
I think it's, you know, there's probably a number of factors. I think certainly the regulators have contributed to the complexity. You can't argue against that. The number of changes around legislation surrounding superannuation, look, absolutely that's created a lot of uncertainty about, you know, about something that's fundamentally a very, very long-term vehicle where you see the legislation and the rules surrounding it constantly changing. Yeah, absolutely that works against, I think, an effective and coherent retirement strategy. But I also think in terms of some of the product manufacturing, you know, the reality is there's a big bucket of money there, let's face it. And, you know, in too many areas, I think it has been seen as a way just to generate profits, make money out of it. And again, that probably goes against what the original intention of superannuation was. You know, it wasn't intended to be a highly complex or a highly structured sort of a vehicle. And yet I think it's become that. And I think as with so many other aspects of our financial lives, the level of complexity has created uncertainty, which has created, I guess, conditions where, you know, there can be unreasonably high, you know, fees and charges or what I would describe as inappropriate even investment type strategies for superannuation.
Anne-Marie, it's as you say, one of its greatest strengths is its long-term benefits, but it's also one of its greatest weaknesses because for many Australians, it could be up there as being their second largest asset, maybe after the family home, maybe. The apathy, I suppose, generally towards superannuation, you wouldn't tell that if they had that money sitting in a bank account, they'd have a different approach. And how would you, from your work with Huon Financial Planning down there in Albury with your team, what would you be doing or think the government should be doing, if anything, to address that apathy potentially towards most people have their towards their superannuation?
Yeah, you're coming up against some pretty strong behavioural biases there, let's face it, where, you know, people are much more concerned with the short-term, immediate, sort of day-to-day financial pressures and something that feels as long-term and far away as retirement or, you know, using superannuation in retirement isn't given the attention it deserved. But I think that's also starting to shift as people are building up more significant wealth within superannuation. I am noticing that at a younger age they are starting to pay more attention to it. Maybe sort of 10 or 15 years ago, it was very hard to get somebody who was under 40 that interested in their superannuation. I think now they look at it and go, oh, okay, well, that is a reasonably significant sum of money, as it's happened by most cases default with the ESG contributions. So I think, you know, there's an element of a weight of money argument will perhaps promote or encourage people to take more interest in their superannuation. But it is hard to get people to have perspective on what might be something seemingly small or even doing something, you know, quite small at the moment, whether that's increasing contributions, reviewing investment strategies, all of those sort of things, helping them to understand the difference that makes to their projected future long-term position, but also, you know, helping them to stay the course because, you know, one of the things that I find really noticeable with the superannuation system is just the range of investment options that are out there, but also, let's face it, the lack of transparency and clarity about how those options are portrayed. And obviously the latest example of that is, you know, well, what is a balanced fund? Is a balanced fund something that's got 90%+ assets in growth assets? Well, arguably not. But with that range of options, it really encourages people to make choices and maybe to make choices far too often. You know, there's not a lot of evidence that people chopping and changing their investment strategies in any way actually adds value in terms of them achieving their long-term outcomes. In fact, a very simple, well-diversified portfolio held for the long term gives them a far greater likelihood of achieving outcomes, and yet they're presented with these, you know, do-it-yourself or, you know, all of these, you know, sector options and select options. So there's, I think, some conflict between what are the long-term objectives of superannuation as a tax structure and way of encouraging people to provide for their own retirement security and presenting them with too much choice and actually exacerbating maybe some of those less positive behavioural investment behaviours.
Yeah, and I think in some ways reminds me of the financial literacy debate and discussion. And I think a lot of people put financial literacy up as a very simple solution to a very complex set of issues. And the more people hear about some of the issues going on with the fight for superannuation between industry and retail, the continual tampering of superannuation policy from governments. So just coming back to that financial literacy point, is financial literacy an answer, or is it probably, like, there's a lot of research against financial literacy, actually doesn't change people's thinking, it probably gives them more information and makes the whole argument a bit more complex? Or is it we need more Anne Marie Humphreys and human financial planning type organisations out there, that it's simply here to help people understand the complexities?
Yeah, I mean, there's no easy solution, but I think, you know, financial literacy is often trotted out, but it's a very difficult thing to achieve in practice. You know, do people have the capacity, interest, skills to really be able to grasp some of these, you know, what are quite complex rules or complex considerations when it comes to investing or tax rules and that side of it? So I personally don't believe that this sort of generic, okay, well, we'll just improve the financial literacy of Australians will really have any meaningful impact at all. I think it's a very individual thing. You know, I do think there's certainly a very important role for professional financial advisors to work with clients to help them understand some of the complexities, but also to put it in context, giving them context for the decisions that they make. And it's very hard, I think, to expect that people would have the capacity to do that themselves. When it comes to investing, you know, a little bit of knowledge can be a pretty dangerous thing. And having somebody who works with you, who acts as a guide, who helps you to actually stick the course, is really, really important. I think there's fairly good instincts out there as well. You know, so often a bit of that reassurance to go, yeah, you know what you're doing is fine. Keep doing it. It'll work. You're well on track, and that's valuable in itself.
Yeah, and even finding someone who they can be trustworthy and confident to go to, that person who hasn't got a bias. I think one of the other interesting biases coming up, and even in the press today, it was noted that in the June quarter, the balance in industry funds is now exceeding retail funds. And they're like drinking the champagne thanks to the Hayne Royal Commission at the moment, saying our inflows are going through the roof. What's your take on this for anyone listening to this and wondering, what is this retail versus industry thing? What's your take for the average Australian, the ramifications of the supposed battle between industry and non-industry funds?
I think that's much more of a battle about between vested interest as it is opposed to what's actually in the best interests of the clients, to be very honest. You know, I've looked at a lot of different superannuation funds over the years, be they industry superannuation funds or retail superannuation funds. You know, there's an enormous range of differences between them. There's an enormous range of fees and charges. Somehow this idea that the industry superannuation funds are somehow less expensive than all of the retail funds, that's most certainly not necessarily the case. I think it's more about having clarity about what it is that the consumer is looking for from their superannuation and structuring that to deliver the the outcomes that they're looking for. I think there's a lot of complexity in the portfolios in the industry superannuation funds. For example, it's not clear that when you actually benchmark the returns that they get against a true benchmark, not one they've chosen themselves, that doesn't necessarily deliver. So I think it's not a matter of one is, you know, the holy grail of superannuation and the other one is somehow not working in the member's interest. There's some very good retail and other superannuation products that can deliver great superannuation solutions tailored to clients' needs and interests and integrated with their other structures. So it's not a matter of one's bad or one's good. It's actually just having a look at each on its merit and says, well, what's important to you here? Is this going to deliver what you're wanting to do and give you the greatest likelihood of achieving what's important to you? I think that's much more about the egos of some of the people that are involved with these funds as opposed to what's necessarily in the interest of their members.
Yeah, it seems to be one of those big end of town bashes that they like having a crack at each other when they're running a speech. Emery, if you were in charge of superannuation policy, you know, in the country today, what would be the first thing that you would do or change that you would make or leadership thrust? What would be the first thing you would do if you were in charge of superannuation policy?
The first thing I would focus on is the clarity. So having very clear guidelines about how all funds report fees, how all funds classify assets, how all funds define, you know, what is a balanced fund or a growth fund and the levels of risks associated with that, because there's far too great a discrepancy between how different funds are doing this. And it's done, as far as I can see, purely for marketing purpose and ratings purposes. You know, So the first thing I would do is have very, very clear rules. It makes it easier for, let's face it, the client to go, okay, well, this is what I'm paying. This is how my money's invested. This is the level of risk that I'm exposed to. And this is how it stacks up against a very clear benchmark. I think if we can get some clarity around that and stop this mucking around between what's disclosed as a, you know, fee and what isn't, and what's a defensive asset and what isn't, it almost needs to be, I think, a very, very structured framework. And then there needs to be oversight of that. You know, when it's not being done properly, there has to be accountability. You know, the damage that it does to people's retirement future is massive when these are made incorrectly.
And the regulators aren't getting many ticks as per the latest Royal Commission, both APRA and ASIC, in terms of their governance of super fund members, both retail and industry.
And nor should they. I mean, a lot of the issues that have been going on in the superannuation industry, as well as the broader wealth management, these have been going on for decades. You know, the regulators have pretty much sat on their hands on some pretty significant issues, and still are. You know, in this day and age, you know, really that we can have things promoted. And the one that sort of really is probably sticking with my mind at the moment is the, you know, the annual rankings that you get for super funds every year about, you know, benchmarking which was the best returning fund for the last 12 months. We all know, anyone with any knowledge of financial markets knows it's pretty much a guarantee about what will be the worst performing fund for the next 12 months. So it's creating a short-term thinking around what is a long-term investment vehicle, and I think that's dangerous. And when you think about that from a broader public policy perspective, the potential for that to undermine the eventual benefits that people will have in retirement are massive. If they continually make poor investment decisions based on what's been the last year's best returning fund or asset class or whatever, that will make a huge difference to what people actually end up retiring on, and then the implications that that flows through then to the public system with, you know, reliance on, you know, government support and Centrelink support, combining that with an ageing population. I view that as a recipe for disaster, and I know the numbers look big when you say, oh, well, you know, superannuation's worth $2 trillion now and it's going to grow to $4 trillion in 10 years and whatever else. But you've got to look at what that money has to support. For the number of people who are retiring, when you look at that and what the actual quality of lifestyle that will maintain, it doesn't look that big when you put it in those sort of context. Those numbers don't look that big when you put it in context.
So, okay, the number one thing there very clearly is clarity that's needed. So last question, Anne-Marie. So anyone listening to this now who has superannuation balances, what are the three questions that they need the answers to, in your opinion? What's the three most important questions they need answered about the governance, control, management of their superannuation, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of, the three key questions is, well, what are the things you can control? Okay, so we can have some control over the fees. What am I paying and what am I getting for that? All of the fees. The second one then I think is very clear about how is my money invested and who is responsible for the decision making about how my money's invested. You know, how have they actually been able to deliver value against a very clear benchmark? So holding them accountable for them for doing that job. And then three is that, do I have enough? You know, is the money that I have in superannuation going to be enough to provide for a comfortable lifestyle in retirement? And if not, what do I need to do? Because the last thing we want is people getting to 65 or 60 and retiring and then going, oh, well, I thought I'd have enough, because you've got this massive longevity risk. People always consistently underestimate how long they're going to live. It's a bit of a shock to actually look at even just normal life expectancy tables. So I think it's about shifting the mindset on short-term assessments to a long-term view, but having absolute clarity in how the superannuation is constructed, including the underlying investments, and how that's going to achieve the outcomes that you're looking for.
So clarity is the word I'm picking up from this, getting people more clear about their second largest and sometimes their largest asset, and I guess not being bedazzled by the size of the numbers, because it does have to provide for quite a long part of your life, when you hope that the expectation that's been set by legislators and even everybody else, I suppose, that they talk to, is that you will be looked after, but quite often the case, it's going to be, could be a bit of a surprise.
Oh, look, absolutely. And we know with the current contribution rates, they're not going to be enough. You know, there was always intended when the superannuation guarantee legislation was introduced that the rate of contributions was going to increase. So, yeah, look, it increased a bit from the original amount, which was 3%, I think, so it's 9.5%, but nowhere near the 20% that was talked about in the very early days of superannuation legislation. The reality is that a person who's relying on just superannuation guarantee contributions, it won't deliver the outcomes. And so there is extra work required in that area. You know, it's still not, I think the system hasn't adjusted enough yet around, you know, how do we manage the longevity risk when it comes to superannuation savings. Even if we look at how retirement income products are structured, there is still not a good suite of products available to really try and manage that longevity side of the things. And I know there's a lot of work going on that at the moment, but we're a long way away from having a comprehensive solution to that, I would argue.
Mm, true. Well, thank God that the people who are lucky enough to be clients of Huon Financial down there in Albury have got you and Lisa and your team to help you with that approach. So thanks, Anne-Marie. That's been absolutely fantastic. Any final comments?
No, that's fine. I think they're all really interesting questions, and I think, you know, we'll all have different perspectives on it. But I think the more that we can have people having ownership of their superannuation and confidence in the system, that's going to make such an important aspect of really creating what will be a world-class system.
What do you take from that? Anne-Marie Humphreys from Huon Financial Planning on the banks of the Murray there in beautiful Albury. It was really clear for me, and the number one thing is clarity. Anne-Marie is all about clarity. Clarity about the fees that you may be paying. Clarity about your own behavioural biases that you may have towards some of the decisions you make. Clarity about these benchmark comparisons. I remember a speech given by the great Peter Thornhill years and years ago talking about when you hear something, your fund compared to someone else's, the first question you'll say, well, compared to what? What does that mean? Make it make sense for me. And I think also the clarity about the so what. So what does that all mean for me? What you're doing for me from a financial advice perspective or a superannuation management perspective? What's in it for me? And the other clarity is her drive. You can sense and hear her drive, her passion to remove all this marketing speak, which may be good for people switching funds and generating more returns for the product manufacturers. But her research is pretty clear. She says that it just doesn't work. It's just never going to, the continual movement of funds maybe benefits those marketing and those, but doesn't obviously benefit those using the funds. The second thing for me, even at 9.5%, our superannuation, it's still not enough. And so we can't become complacent. We need to get advice to ensure that we don't hit that horrible surprise that our assumptions that we'll be right aren't right, particularly when we may have less options to work with later in our working lives. And the third thing I've picked up very clearly is active. This whole active story from Anne-Marie's perspective is a story compared to sort of like the flat earth stuff. It's she's out there saying it's round, but people are still getting paid a lot of money and building big institutions and brand names around their ability to beat markets and play an active role with your money as compared to the passive role. Very strong arguments there to be considered and to have that sort of conversation, hopefully with your own advisor in superannuation. So for me, everything, Anne-Marie, if we don't have clarity on fees, on your money's performance, so you can clearly understand in your own speak, well, so what? What does all this mean for me? Then you may need to be seeking better advice. So there you have it. Another great advisor, Anne-Marie Humphreys from Huon Financial Planning with a great boutique team, delivering great professional, no perceived or real conflicted advice there in Albury. Who's making a great difference in her clients' lives, not by product selection, but by the paths you put people on. Love to get your feedback as always. Jim Stackpool from the Certainty Advice Group podcast series. If there's anything else you'd like us to talk about, any feedback, please let us know. Cheers for now.
Thanks for listening to the Certainty Advice podcast with Jim Stackpool. To access all the materials from today's show or to join in the conversation, please head on over to seekingcertainty.com. Please let us know what you think. We'd love to hear your feedback. Seekingcertainty.com.